if I chose to go the other route and not hurdle that, I would not be a three-time Olympian. I would not be a two-time assistant coach, gold medal Olympian. And I wouldn't be the head coach of an Olympic team today. So I chose to go the hardest route and not the easiest route. And I got to the other side and it's been plentiful.
All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and by trade and training, I am a sport and performance psychologist, and I am fortunate to work with some of the most extraordinary thinkers and doers across the planet. And the whole idea behind these conversations, behind this podcast, is to learn from people, to pull back the curtain, to explore how they've committed to mastering both their craft and their minds. And our minds are our greatest asset. And if you want to learn more about how you can train your mind, this is just a quick little reminder here, to check out the online psychological training course that I've created with the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll. And that can be found at findingmastery.net/course. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time in early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. This week's conversation is with Dawn Staley. the University of South Carolina women's basketball head coach and Team USA Olympic head basketball coach for the Tokyo Olympic Games. Under her leadership, the South Carolina Gamecocks have received many firsts: national championship, NCAA, Final Fours, number one rankings, SEC regular season and tournament titles, SEC Player of the Year, National Player of the Year, WNBA number one draft pick, and number one recruiting classes. I mean, it's unbelievable what she's done at this program. And while her coaching career is in full bloom, Dawn is still recognized for her body of work as one of the most decorated participants in the United States women basketball history. The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame solidified that legacy with her enshrinement as part of the class of 2013. And I wanted to speak with Dawn to understand her leadership style. How does she do it? How does she pull the best out of so many? And then I wanted to learn how we can all apply those same insights inside and outside the world of sport. We discussed the qualities required to become resilient, to be agile, especially when adversity strikes, and why relationships are at the center of her coaching philosophy. And with that, let's jump right into this week's conversation with the legend, Dawn Staley. Dawn, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Where are we living right now? Where are you?
I'm in Columbia, South Carolina, where it's pretty hot, pretty humid. But I'm enjoying being home.
Yeah. So I know that the intro that I just read gives a nod to how much you've done. And so I just want to start off by saying congratulations on everything. Like you're one of the rare few that have really blazed the trail, and the rest of the folks that get to look at what you've done to say, ooh, how? And so that's what I want to focus on this conversation. Like, you have created something that is hard to get my arms around because you've had so much success so often. And so I can't ask you the question how. Like, it just doesn't quite work like that. But if we could just set a little context up quickly. Where'd you grow up? What was it like?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, North Philly, specifically in the housing projects called the Raymond Rosen Housing Projects. And the housing projects was, when I grew up, it was comprised of a circular, like row homes. And in the middle of that circle was a big field where it was big enough for a softball field, a baseball field. We created a track. And then it was a basketball court. So it was huge field that, and it was just space. But there was a fence for a baseball field. And then it was just in the basketball court, and then it was just wide open space. And then looking out into the field were the start of some high rises. And if you grew up in the projects and you lived in the row homes, we thought we lived in like suburban America, because the high rises were filled with some of everything. You could smell the urine as you get on the elevator or walk through the halls or get on the elevator. You can encounter anything in the high rises. So in the row homes, we had three rooms, small kitchen, small living room, small dining area, but it was like your own home. And I thought we had a lawn, you know, our block was the fourth block, and we had a block captain that, I mean, she did not let anybody not mow their lawn or plant flower. I mean, it was beautifully done by everybody that lived in that house. Now, her grandchildren used to live in a neighboring block. Like, if we were the fourth block, her grandkids lived in the fifth block, and the fifth block did not look as nice as our block. So even her her grandchildren were under her wrath when it comes to coming to our block and not treating it like they live there. So we had that. And the dynamics of living in the projects are so great because we did not know life outside of the projects. And we felt like we had everything that we needed to arm ourselves to be survivors. We knew we were, you know, surrounded by a lot of negative, a lot of, you know, a lot of crime. But we also were protected by the people in our neighborhood that wouldn't allow us to stray off the, you know, straight to the wrong path. And we were just a close-knit group that just really took care of each other. If, you know, during the summer hours, the long days, hot, we would get together at, and it was usually my house. All the parents went to work. We would kind of put our money together and we would go to the store and we would cook cheesesteaks for the entire neighborhood. And everybody really kind of took turns doing this. So it was a cool environment to grow up in. And it was, you learn a great foundation of discipline, because I grew up in a household where my mother, she didn't spare the rod. She's a faithful woman. She was a woman of great character and expected nothing else but that from her kids. And during those days, our parents allowed parents in the neighborhood to help us grow and learn and stay on the right path. So it was a beautiful environment where you learn how to, you know, grow up with great character, with being surrounded by 100% like Black people. Like, I didn't really get a interaction with any white people until in my later stages of playing AAU basketball. And then they would marvel. They would want to come in our neighborhood to kind of check it out. And then when they would take me to the suburbs, you know, these big homes, and I mean, it was something made out of TV. But they also prepared me for what I was going to see at the University of Virginia, because it would have been an eye-opening experience had I not interacted with someone other than my race.
Okay, so you look back at your childhood with great fondness, with a gratitude. You look back as it was a place that you learned first principles, core values, community, togetherness, have your back, have my back. You know, you learned that. Oftentimes the projects are associated with crime and gang and violence and poverty and not caring and struggle. And I could keep going, right, to describe some of the attributes. And you're saying, if I get the picture right, you're saying, yeah, okay, some of that's in there, right? But let me tell you the other thing, right? So was it gang involved? Was your, would you say the fourth block, was that gang involved or not gang involved?
The fourth block was not gang involved at all. Mm-hmm. Like there was no crime on my block.
No.
But if you go across the field, I'm not trying to shame the high rises, but once you cross the big field,
yeah, right, yeah,
anything could happen. Like you could hear shots fired. You could see people running.
How did mom keep you from being attracted? Or like, what was that scenario about? Because I'll describe my childhood right now. When I saw something that was different and something that was a little risky or whatever, I was interested in it. Mm-hmm. And kids are supposed to kind of push up against boundaries and figure that whole thing out. It sounds like you went over to the high rises, you knew, but then you didn't stay there, if you will. And I don't know if this is coming off right, but I'm curious, like, what were the mechanisms in your family unit where they kept you from straying?
Here's the biggest thing.
Okay.
That a lot of times that, well, not a lot of times, here's what's missing in homes today that I had in my home. I was more scared of my mother than anybody on earth. So when you fear your parents, you're not going to stray out. When you're out of their sight, you're not going to stray from the very things that they taught you in that high that our household, because you don't want to make them look bad. You don't want a beating. You don't want to break the sanctity of what the Stanley family was all about.
Would they use that like at in the Stanley family? We fill in the blank.
No, we don't.
No, it wasn't that prescriptive. No,
there were actions. You know, my mother was a woman of few words. You look at her face, her facial expressions will tell it all. If you do something within her sight, anything that's within reach, a shoe, an iron, an extension cord, she used that. And we were well aware of when we knew we've crossed the line in any way. And I just utilized that by being observant and aware of my surroundings and the people. And we're not a very trusting family or neighborhood. We built that. We built that trust with how we grew up and how we treated each other. And it just wasn't because, you know, we lived in the same neighborhood.
So you said we were not trusting, but we built trust. So amongst each other, like, okay, I want to pause that or pin that for a minute because that's really powerful. But you're saying that two things. Mom would use just about anything, not except for words. And there was a clear line. You knew behavior that was acceptable and unacceptable to the principles of the family. And when you crossed it, be careful. Right. And then so you knew that if you went out and did some stuff that was not okay, when you came home, it might be worse than what might have taken place outside.
Bingo.
Yep. Okay. You grew up afraid of mom. And mom loved you?
Absolutely.
Okay. So how did those two work together? Because I know you as a coach of being like, whoo, like a disciplinary, like an authoritarian. Like, listen, if I played for you, I'd be like, ooh, you know, like, you know, like you're going to bring something out of me, right?
You actually wouldn't.
Okay. So tell me, this is the blend between the love, the acceptance, the getting, and then the discipline, the whatever. Okay. So I want to understand that from mom first, and then I want to understand how you do it.
My mom loved hard. Loved Ooh. Hard. Like Ooh. There was an incredible balance of discipline. And it was that other side of, you know, if you abide by her rules, you live clean. You're good. You live a happy life. You know, she'll love up on you. She'll kiss you. She'll hug you. She'll take you for ice cream every Sunday. She will give you the shirt off her back. All of that. If you just do what she tells you to do and abide by the rules of her house. And that's why I always say, you know, I do have a reputation as being a very disciplined coach. But people see game day. When you just look at game day and you just take game day as that's who that person is, then you don't really understand the dynamics of team, of teacher, of nurturer, of forging a relationship with your players, that you can outwardly be who you are. And I've been very fortunate that my players allow me to be who I am because they know we've built a relationship to understanding that it is totally out of respect that I coach them the way I need to coach them to move them from where they are. They all aspire to be certain things. And I'll tell you this, I've had a lot of different coaches in my career. Coaches, one who were just strictly positive, just all positive. They see positive in everything. I've been coached by a coach who was methodical, low turnover, value the ball. I've been coached by a coach who who allowed me to make mistakes and be creative and taught me through those mistakes. I've been coached by someone who pretty much rolled the ball out and say, do what you need to do. Create your magic. You're a disciplined player. You're not going to damage the sanctity of a team. So do you. And then I took all of those. And I had coaches who just play head games. Like, had you thinking outside of the, you know, 94 feet. And I've taken all of those experiences. And for me, I think I just take the good from them that works for me. And I'm a player's coach because I coach like I'm their point guard versus being up here and they're down here. I'm a team member.
Yeah. You know what I have a sense of? Let me use a military analogy for a minute. Is that if we got to get into a foxhole, God, I'd love you to be in the foxhole.
I'm your girl.
Okay. I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high-quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out. What emotions have you felt while we've been talking?
I enjoy reminiscing on the very thing that continues to ground me, mm-hmm. and the very thing that is my foundation, because that's my rock. I've never strayed from living in the projects in North Philly, never strayed from the discipline that's required to be successful. And it's very simple. You know, discipline is being able to, in the moment, not do things that you want to do. Do things that created the habit for you to have the temptation not to. And I just, it's a simple math life equation that I just try to teach our players to, if you have a certain level of discipline. And I said, my favorite quote, and the quote that I live by, is the disciplined person can do anything. And a lot of times people don't understand that you could be disciplined in something that's positive and that can help you in your life. You can also be disciplined in something that's negative and be as good, that's having a negative impact on your life. So I do have to be specific when I say those things, because there's a big difference that will take your life and your career one way or the other.
Yeah, you hear the phrase like, if that person was half as creative on cheating and getting over and just do the work, they become president, CEO of whatever. Yeah, you know, okay. So I would love to learn discipline from you. I believe that is a first principle that you own. You've got your arms around it. I don't know if I could learn. I don't know this yet. So maybe this is going to be fighting words. I don't know if I could learn coming from a place of abundance. And so these might be fighting words. And so I don't want to fight about it, but okay. I want to tell you a story here is, if you're trying to shape an athlete from scarcity, desperation, or from abundance and let's go abundance or desperation, like one of those two. I think you came from scarcity. Mom came from a place of fear. I don't know if you do or not. That's why I'm not sure if I would be able to learn that from you, because you've experienced so much. You have abundance. I believe that you have love, deep love in your heart. When I look at your track record of the decisions you made to go back to be around mom, to go back to be around dad, right? To name your house after mom. I believe love is big for you. So I don't know if I'm touching a nerve, but I would love to know if I could also learn the approach from abundance.
A great question. So it's a really great question. And I don't know the answer to that question, because that really hasn't been my experience. And right. Your experience mm-hmm. is the very thing that shapes you. Now, I will say this. I think over the years, I have an abundance of things that have shaped me because of my successes. And I don't put the cart before the horse when it comes to thinking that I don't rely on my successes at all.
I get that. I totally get that for you. Yep.
So everything that I go into wanting it to be as simple as possible. As simple. Teach simple. I think I'm a master in basketball. For the time that I put in, I think I'm masterful when it comes to knowing certain things on the floor. But that doesn't make me a great coach, because I know more than other people. What makes me a great coach is I know how to meet people where they are, to take them where they need to go. So that means if a player, let's just say a player had a learning disability, but they're a great player. Like I'm watching our freshman class, trying to figure out all the newness of how we teach basketball. And we teach basketball. We start to the simplest form. We go to a basketball stance. How elementary is that? How campish is that? But every single year, from year one to year, I'm starting 22. We start the same exact way from a defensive standpoint, the same way from a defensive standpoint. And by the time someone's a junior or senior, they're like, they're bored with it. And you get bored with being disciplined. Like, it's a boring place to do something over and over and over, the same thing, the simplest thing, over and over and over again. I see the spectrum of the newbies who have no idea what we're talking about, to the juniors who look like they've done it all their lives. And then the seniors who are just completely bored with it because this is their fourth or fifth year that they have to do this. And depending on how quickly the youngsters grasp it, we can move forward.
Okay. So from discipline, if we're not careful, we become rigid, right? There's like over-discipline is like, we just get, this is me speaking about me and my life. Like, if there's too much discipline, there's a monotony to it. There's a boredom to it. I get kind of beat down, and I get what my teachers are trying to do is be disciplined to groove the behaviors and to become familiar with the best thoughts, right? So we're eliminating variance by trying to, you know, stay true to one thing. So that thing becomes masterful and then we build on it. How do you help people express the creative part? Because I heard it earlier where you're just like, hey, some coaches just rolled the ball out and said, do your thing, because you've earned the right, because you've been so disciplined that they trust you. This is the art of coaching now, from discipline to creative.
Yeah.
And maybe you say, hey, listen, there's no space for creative. Just do the blueprint.
No, there's always space for creative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'll take our freshman class. One of our players is super special. Like, she can do things that no one else on our team as a freshman can do. Her basketball IQ was, you know, off the roof. Her court vision is incredible. Her movements are so natural. So when we slow her down and say, this is how we want to play for right now, she is half of the athlete that she is. She's thinking, she's slow, she's in thought, she stops. So you have to communicate. This is very new for you. You're gonna go through thought process, and she's a perfectionist, so she's trying to get it right. So discipline is just keep her on that path, but just kind of explain to her that this is gonna help you eventually. Doesn't feel like it right now, but it's gonna help you. But so here's what I need you to do. I need you to play through it because we need to get to your greatness. Because her greatness is on the other side of it, but she's trying to figure it out. And we need to take our minds through figuring things out. Because if you just play off of what you do in your greatness, that's all you're going to rely on. If somebody else is greater in that, you don't have anything to fall back on. So it's teaching her mental strength. It's teaching her to train her thoughts and her body. Because once that becomes one, she's going to be able to do some more incredible things. I like to teach our players not to these things, because if you learn them, you can play for anybody. Like, you can play for not just for us and our coaching staff, but when it's time for you to get to the next level and the next level after that, it's a matter of just semantics. And if you have an understanding of it, but the terminology is a little bit different, you're going to fit in and you're going to have ultimately longevity in basketball.
I asked a similar type question to a multiple world champion in wrestling. And it's definitely an alpha competitive sport. And I said, how, you know, like trying to oversimplify it. Like, how are you so good? And he goes, you know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I just know the alphabet. I know the full alphabet. So now I'm just putting words together that are fun to play with. And like I think you know the alphabet. Is that right? You know the alphabet of basketball.
Yes.
You know the alphabet. Okay, so you're playing now. Okay, so let's go back to this really eloquent thing that you just said, which is like helping them blend. Gosh, that's not how you said it. Put together their body and their mind. How did you say that? is something to that effect.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to strengthen someone's mentality without failure. So when their minds and bodies match up, it will take them a lot further than just their bodies, because everybody gets tired and fatigued. So what happens when you get tired and fatigued? Something else has to kick in, and that's your habits and your mentality. Like, you have to be mental. I'm a firm believer in this, and a coach taught me this, and a coach taught her this, which is, and I think it's a Bobby Knight quote. And I believe Bobby Knight said, mental is the physical as four is to one. And it took me a while to really understand that. Just as an adult, it took me to understand that, because for so long growing up, I was better physically and skill-wise. I was better than everybody else. But when it was time for me to try out for the 1992 Olympic team, and some other more experienced players had something that I didn't have, and I get cut, that's when you start realizing it's more than just the physical part of it. And you get cut, you can't be physical anymore. It's mental. It's mental to get over, you know, not being able to do something that you work so hard for.
How about physical. That? Is that, yeah, if you really want to do something special, you're going to face challenges. Those challenges are not physical.
At all.
How about
at
it?
All.
Right? Yeah. And those challenges happen on the court. They happen off the court. And the same internal strategies and skills will hopefully be available both on the court and off the court. So 4-1, how do you go about this 4-1 ratio? I don't get a sense. This is going to hook back around trust, right? Like, I think if you're going to bring somebody into your team, you're probably going to start with like, well, let's see what you got, you know, like a professional, like another coach or whatever, or a sports psych, and that you got to earn trust with you, because that's a strong framework that you come from. So do you bring anyone in onto your team to help with, let's call it, mental imagery, meditation, goal setting, self-talk, you know, and do you bring anyone in, or are you a couple steps ahead and you are teaching your athletes?
I don't in that regards. I do in team building, life skills. I do believe that you have to have different voices, because your players can tire of your voice. And that's probably why I don't talk a whole lot. Like, I'm not a talking coach. Like, I talk when I feel like what I say will penetrate our players.
I mean, there's mom, right? What's up, mom? You know, she's coming through.
I hear my mother shout. Like, the older I get, the more I'm mom-like.
And my hair stands up when I talk to you. Like, it's just the truth of it. Like, I believe you. Like, you get right to the truth. So how do you, this is not related to this conversation right now, because that's not, what I'm about to say is not happening right here, but how did you develop from mom, I'm imagining, the ability to speak the truth, and probably the truth to power? You know, like, I believe that you would stand up for anybody. So how did you learn to speak the truth?
I learned to speak the truth when you really start listening to your heart. Because it's heart driven.
Wait, that's so big.
Yeah.
That's right. Because it's not like, hey, these are the right thoughts to have. It's go and understand within what is true from your feeling, from your belief system, and then the words will just happen. Is that?
That is so true. And I don't think I'm a great public speaker, like me, if I'm judging myself, but everybody I seem to talk to, or when I'm giving a public speech, they walk away with thinking I'm, you know, I get a lot of standing ovations and I don't really get it. But in some ways I do, because I am speaking like me. I am unapologetic. I speak what I think my truth is. And I'm not judgmental. I just let people be who they are. And again, I meet them where they are, whether I'm giving a speech or not. That's who my mother is. Bless her soul, like, you know, in heaven. But let me just give you a...
Wait, you can't run over these feelings that you're feeling right now. What just happened? Yeah.
I don't know, because I was shy, like uncomfortably shy when I went from the projects in North Philly to Virginia. I was good around my teammates, bad media. Like, I would get one word answers. As I reflect on it, it was because I didn't trust. Like, I didn't trust the people who were asking me the questions. I didn't know them. And I don't give myself, I wasn't back then, I didn't give myself to people without having a certain level of trust. So, and I look at myself now, and you really can't shut me up, but I don't say more than the words that are needed. So it was a kind of a delicate balance. But I learned that from my mother. Like, I truly learned all of it from my mother, because I watched her. You know, she was the person in my household that allowed me the range of emotions that, you know, that taught me through her example. So it was a pretty cool dynamic, although there were some days where, you know, I felt her wrath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was just guiding, though. She was just guiding to where she knew when I left her household, I was going to be okay. Even when I, you know, sometimes I watch our student, my players come here and they get from under their parents, and then they just do things. They go and get tattoos, you know, on the first day that they're here, because they're not under the guise of their parents anymore. But I was never that way. I carried, and my father has something to do with this too, but my mother was the strongest figure in my life because of, she was the one that was administering the discipline. And my father was a quiet man and just allowed, everybody had a role. He was the provider. You know, she was the disciplinarian. And we just knew growing up in our household.
Brothers and sisters? Yes, Three brothers. Yep. Yes. Yeah, you've experienced quite a bit of, let's call it death and disease. Mm-hmm. In your family, right? And so I want to get to the grief part, like, because you've got some experience here. So I want to get to what insights you have going through the grief process. Before we go there, I'd like to know, like, great explorers, they're trying to figure something out. I see you as an explorer. What are you trying to figure out?
For me, I'm trying to, I owe basketball a great deal. Like, I feel like I'm forever indebted to the game for all the things that it's given me. And I want to figure out each of my players. I want to figure out what's inside of them, and I want to help them find their niche in life. And I hope it's basketball, because I'm pretty good at it. I've dedicated my entire life to it. But also know that there's more to life than basketball. I mean, it's a big part of it. And it's been a big part of my life. So I understand that part of it. But I know that there's only a certain percentage of women that's going to be able to be pros. So I have to balance, you know, and I'm guilty of being a coach that coaches from the worst case scenario. Worst case. I try to put our players in a worst case scenario, whether it's life or whether it's on the court, because anything outside of that creates advantages. So if they can fight their way out of being in the worst situation, everything else is going to be quite simple to navigate.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTrue.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's AquaTrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. What is a compromise worst case scenario situation that you create in practice?
So in practice, if we're going over a press breaker, right? Mm-hmm. I'll put them in the corner furthest away from the basket, right? And they're double teamed, right? You get out of the corner, you're going to create a transitional advantage. But getting out of that corner is hard to navigate. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, pass fakes, whether it's pivoting, whether it's jump passing, there is a lot of skill set and thought that goes into how do I get myself out of this situation? And once they do, they'll appreciate getting out because the reward is at the other end of the other end of the court where we're scoring with ease.
There's an apt metaphor for life there, which is to put yourself mentally in scenarios that you know are going to be difficult and work through those, you know, first. Maybe it's on paper, maybe it's role playing, maybe it's practice in a boardroom or whatever, you know, but to at least have an idea about how things could go wrong and not just stay there, but have the idea of what could go wrong or what could be hard, and then to practice inside of that to sort it out. There's an apt metaphor for life there.
Yeah, but for me, I'm my very best when things aren't going well. Like I don't like when everything's comfortable. I don't like being in that place because you tend to let your guard down.
So how do you let go of control? That's where I was going to go with you, because I see that you've got a command of yourself, and what you're just describing here is like when it's unfolding and unpredictable and it's a bit chaotic, I'm at my best. But you keep your guard up. Tell me about that, because there's a vulnerability required to take risk. So how do you, and listen, your track record speaks for itself, like you go for it. So how do you do that and not like lose control, if you will? Because I think that's what people are afraid of, is that if they take a shot, they take a risk, they do something that is kind of breaking the rules or whatever to sort it out, and it doesn't go right, that they won't be able to handle the downstream effects from it.
I think my approach is, I'm in the space of operating. What would you do if you knew you wouldn't fail?
It's really powerful. I get confused with it. So help me. I understand it. I understand it. But I get caught in a loop there.
I don't get rattled. Like
Oh, that's where you take that. Okay.
Yes, I don't flinch. I don't flinch. I don't. In games, if someone go, if our opponent goes on a 10-0 run, you know, most coaches are like, quick.
Right.
So, but you have to assess, because a 10-0 run doesn't mean that you're not taking good shots. It doesn't mean that you aren't defending the 10-0 run. It's just they made a better play. You made it hard for them, but they just made a play. And if you're taking good shots, they're going to eventually fall, and it's going to balance itself out.
All right. So you're looking below a level. You're not getting caught up in the scoreboard. You're like, are we taking good shots? Are we in our right defensive posture? You know, are we making good decisions? If we are, it's going to work out, because what else can we do?
Right.
Is that where you come from? Like, yeah, what else can we? So I've seen that you really like the concept, the framework, control what you can.
Yep.
Like, so you focus most of your efforts on controllables. Is that fair to say?
Controllables, yes.
Yeah. I think you've mastered them. I go a step further than just for you. Like when I listen and I watch, that you're not just trying to control them, you're actually trying to master the things that are in your control. And I think you're probably trying to teach that to the athletes you're coaching. So what are the things, let's be super academic here, what are the things that you focus on that are in your control that you're helping others master?
Attitude, that's one.
100%.
Communication is huge. Like 100%. Top of my list is to be able to communicate. And for me, communication is that. Some young people really don't know how to communicate appropriately in different situations. I don't care about that.
You're talking about like a frown, a cut with an eye. You know, the cut with the eye, you know, it says so much. I was talking to an athlete, this was up at the Seahawks, and he suffers no fools. This is an alpha, okay? Suffers no fools. I said, how do you sort out who you trust? He goes, I just watch. If they can cut somebody with their eyes and do it to their face, I'm going to trust them. And so you know what I mean by cut with the eyes, right? Like you just like, it's just like a little look like, hey, we're gonna drop our shoulders and we're going to look at each other. And like, if I give you that nod, like, are you real? And the other person flinches. So yeah, that is so good. Okay. So that's what you're talking about too. Sometimes it's just, it's a way you carry yourself, not necessarily the words that you choose. It is nice when they both line up though.
Yeah, it's good. I like for people to express themselves and not hold back. You know, I would say I do, the caveat is you really can't do it in front of a team. I don't do it in front of a team. If you really have something to say, you know, come speak to me one-on-one, curse, scream, cry, do whatever you need to do. We can work out appropriate delivery. We can work that out. That's not an issue. We can't always get to the young person expressing themselves and saying what's on their minds and hearts. So I have an open mouth policy to say what you need to say, even sometimes in a team setting, because we'll use it as a lesson. We'll use it. Like, I was big on, I haven't had to deal with this in quite a long time, in that when we had players who just flat out were disrespectful in a practice, I used to send them home, like, get out. Like, I don't anymore. I don't deal with it anymore. But when I got over that part of it, I made them stay in the gym and maybe get on the bike or get on a treadmill so they can be in this environment so they can learn. Leaving them and letting them go, that's what they want to do. Be on their own terms and go back and get on FaceTime. No, let's stay here. Let's learn. Let's see what other people are doing so you can see what the appropriate behavior is and how we need to act in a team setting. So I really think that's just a evolution in coaching, because sometimes you want to just separate yourself from the bad behavior, but that's not helping the person. They need examples of how to do it the right way.
That's cool, because sometimes if I reach that place and it's that type of thing, like, okay, get out of here. That's actually a relief for me, which is that's not what I'm trying to sort out either. You know? So yeah, I love that insight. That's a powerful insight. How do you speak to yourself? Like, I'd love to know the language that you use inside. How do you speak to yourself when you are, it's good to be you now, when it's real good in there? How do you speak to yourself?
I don't know if I do speak to myself.
Oh my God. Of course you do. You've got a whole narrative in there. You got a whole.
I don't know if I'm speaking to myself or if I'm just assessing situations. Maybe I do. Let me just give you this example. Like, because I do speak to myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I interviewed for the Portland Trail Blazers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was like when they first expressed that they had interest, and before they expressed that, I really had no interest in coaching NBA, WNBA, anything. None, like no ounce of me. And maybe it's because nobody really had interest in me. But the moment they had interest in me, I had interest in it. I think mainly because of the challenge, because it was something different, something new, something that not very many college coaches have had success right away anyway. So leading up to and it was probably 5 or 6 days between, you know, when I talked to them and when the interview was. So it occupied my mind a lot. Like, I visualized me being in the locker room. There were NBA playoff games going on. So I would just kind of put myself in those situations. What would you do? How would you react? You know, I'm a Sixers fan. So I'm looking at the Sixers and I'm watching Ben Simmons, you know, just lose confidence. He's one of the focal points of our team, and he just lost confidence. I'm like, what would I say to him? What would I do to him? All while, you know, looking at this interview that I'll have in a few days and saying, you know, how do I prepare for this? And I'm asking myself, like, how do you prepare? Like, what? I really don't know anything about the coaching in the NBA. But here's what I do know. I know people. I know my separation in coaching has a lot to do with my interaction and me forging relationships with people. So that's what I'm going to expound on. The X-ing and O-ing, it's X-ing and O-ing. You can learn that. I think I have things that coaches can learn at this point of their careers, because it is the very thing that I've built my career on, which is the person and figuring out how to deal with them and all the things that they're thinking about and all the things that they want to achieve while not compromising the sanctity of the team. And I think that's what's missing in the NBA.
I think you're right. And I want to go two ways on this. One is the way you speak to yourself is that you create images about what something in the future could look like. And then you're working your way through it. How could I, how would I, what would be a solution? And then underneath that, I think you've got this fundamental belief that probably isn't evident to you, but this fundamental belief that, hey, I can do hard things. I know people, put me in a situation. I can do hard things and I know people, those two combined. And yes, I can learn all the X's and O's. And I know a lot of them. I can learn all that.
It's the foxhole.
It's a foxhole thing. Yeah, it's a foxhole thing. But it's the your two kind of crown jewels right now that seems to me are you know people and you know virtues and values and how to bring those out of people, but you understand humanness. And then the other is that you can do hard things. You've been through hard times. The most hard times is losing loved ones, but you've been through hard times and you understand that you how to stay intact during them. Are those your two of your crown jewels? And discipline is the way that you bring that out.
Well said. I couldn't say that. I couldn't eloquently say that.
We got there together. Yeah, we got there together on it. Thank you. Okay, so, all right. Here's what I think you and the NBA, the only thing I get tripped up on is that the reputation of like the coaches don't have as much power as players. I don't know if you could manage that. You know, like you're gonna have a command. You're like they'd be in it for a shocker. How about that?
Here's what I think about NBA players. I think they want something they can believe in. When they can look good in it and they have an impact on it. Like the stars are the stars. And there's a pecking order when it comes to NBA teams. Where I think I'm really good at is I certainly would let the stars be the stars, but it's the other people, the people that's sitting, you know, at the end of the bench. You have to bring value to them. You have to allow them to see value in themselves and the team without playing as many minutes as they want to play, but still bring value to them. And that's a role that, you know, sit from the outside looking in, and then talking to the Portland Trailblazers, it was a big part of how do you discipline the superstars? How do you keep the culture of a team while holding them accountable to behaviors that are detrimental to the team?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And what practices do you have?
It's really simple. It's you have to forge that relationship with each and every player. And you have to manage that. Whether it's, and again, I go back to my point guard skills. I know I'm the coach. They know they're the superstars. They know they're the role players. So what I would do is it's just communicating. It's frank conversations. You'll figure out how they like to take in information, because ultimately you want them to be who they are while respecting the whole sanctity of the team. And you, if you look at the whole evolution of a basketball, like a basketball season, the more you win, the tighter you get. It is. Like, look at the Phoenix Suns. They're tight. They're playing for a purpose. And that purpose is their coach. And the tragedy that he went through, they're playing for a point guard who's never been to an NBA Finals and never won a championship. They got a young star who is having the best playoff series of his career, and comparable to other ones, the best in probably a long time being a young player. So you look at that dynamic, then everybody else, you see all the players who don't even play, they're in it. They're in it. How do you create that in the preseason? And then during this, and hold on to it during the season and create the momentum you need to win a championship. You do it by communicating and creating a togetherness and addressing when things occur. Like, I believe that success has a certain look, a certain sound, and a certain feel. And if something doesn't look, sound, or feel right, you got to address it. You can't not address it, because you're just allowing it to grow. And when you allow it to grow, it starts steeping in. It becomes a bigger problem to overcome in a season. And you'll go through things that would take a 5-minute conversation. But yet it's grown to a month, to 2 months, and now you're not only just trying to win basketball games, you're trying to dig yourself out of what's happening with your team.
Sometimes people will sell a virtue or a principle for a short-term win, or they'll sell it for avoidance of uncomfortableness, right? It's those two things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm on the record saying that values and virtues and all character traits, whatever you want to call them, are they're cheap until you have to pay for them. And then they get really expensive. And they're not yours until you pay for them. They're not yours. You know, so you are relationship-based, developmentally minded, and completely authentic. I think you go into any room, any coaching environment, and be an absolute agent for mastery, for brilliance. And you had said that one of your missions in life, that's my word, not yours, is to help unlock the greatness in others. I think you do it by having a true, authentic commitment to development and relationships, those two. How do you help people see what's possible? Or do they show it to you and you just play it back to them?
I just have a real insatiable desire for the process, desire to help people through their process. So do I see it? I don't see it in all of them. They don't show me, everyone doesn't show me it, but everybody has something inside of them. So I don't go in with preconceived. Again, I meet people where they are. That's something that a lot of people don't do. Like, if I think somebody can be great, I don't expect greatness like today. It's a journey. You gotta lead them to the greatness. You tell them how good they are and how good they can be, but where are you today? Okay. And then you have to stop. Where are you tomorrow? Where are you the next day? And how does it measure up to where you're trying to go?
Yeah, you got to be real. I was going the same place about honesty, is that I think you're creating honest humans.
They don't always like it, though.
I understand.
They learn to like it and respect it because they see the growth. Now, it's hard when they don't see growth. It's really hard when a young person doesn't see themselves getting better. But then you have to act. You have to show them. Like, yeah, sit down with them. Hey, this is what you were doing like 2 weeks ago. You're not doing that anymore. Even a little bit. Or or you're not doing it. You're doing the same thing. You're getting worse. So let's figure out how we just get better. And there's buy-in to that. There's huge buy-in. And I also think that creating an environment where others are on that same mission to be great. Because if they're not, the synergy's off. Somebody's going to pull somebody away from their growth and their path to be great.
And for you, is greatness and measured externally or internally? Or is there some sort of hybrid between the two? Because you have all of the accolades, 3-time Olympian gold medalist, like you've got fill in the blanks, it keeps going. But when you think about greatness and then a togetherness of greatness, I don't want to sound Pollyannish when I say this, because I've experienced this, and we won everything we won the Super Bowl through this method at the Seahawks, which was, it was a full commitment for people to operate at their upper limits on a consistent basis. And we thought we might win, but it was almost like an afterthought. It was really, the commitment was to work at our very best collectively together towards our upper reaches day in and day out, recover as if it was the thing that mattered most, so you could go do the other thing that mattered most, which is work your ass off the next day together. So it really, when I say this and not be Pollyannish, is, are you committed to people working towards their very best, or are you committed, is greatness building a dynasty where you win over and over and over again?
For me, it's the people. It really is.
Shocker. Shocker. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you have to build a culture first. Like you have to build a culture of players having the synergy to be great every day and to compete every day. And I say this because we're in a position that not a whole lot of programs have been in. Like we got 16 players. I believe 11 of them are like all American high school players, 11. And then the other players are great in their own right. So I'm thinking, how are they going to differentiate? How are they going to edge each other out when it comes to playing time and divvying up the playing time? It's an incredible competitive environment that they're some of them going to sink or swim, but we're going to arm them with whatever they need to be successful. And we're not going to let them off the hook because this is what they signed up for. And it's much like a WNBA team. And I'm so happy because these players they believe in this environment. They want this. Now, I know we're 6 months removed from being in the middle of the season, but right now they have a cool innocence and purity about where they are at this stage of our season. Now, as we get closer to naming the starting lineup and getting substitution patterns, we know, and we hope there isn't issues. There's going to be some issues, but it's cool for me as a coach to work through them during the process. So when it happens to them, if they don't get the playing time that they want, they've already been through it. So they already know how to react to it, even though they don't like it. Even though it's something that, you know, they didn't envision in their minds, them sitting for 20 minutes of a game or 30 minutes of a game, we're playing only 10 minutes. So it's such a cool dynamic that I'm so looking forward to, because again, it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge for us to get them to believe in each other and still believe in themselves, even though they're not getting what they want. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it because it's much different than I've ever coached in 22 years.
It really is like an all-star team that you're pulling together. Yeah, it is. Work. Yeah, not just for one weekend, but for months. Okay, is there a decision or an experience that changed everything for you?
I have to go back to when I got cut from the 1992 Olympic team. It was a huge lesson, life lesson for me, because I had never failed that bad. Meaning, the only thing I wanted to do, being in that house, that row home and the housing projects, I didn't see women play, but twice on TV. That was Olympic Games and National Championship. So when I got cut in 1992, that was just like me, you know, that was a goal. It was a goal. And I reached the crossroad of, do I think because I got cut is a political thing, so I'm not going to go back, or I'm going to put myself in a position where I'm going to be an asset the next time that I try out for an Olympic team. They're not going to leave me off the roster. So I chose the latter and worked my butt off. They said when I got cut, there were two reasons. I was too short and I didn't have enough international experience. So I couldn't do anything about my height, but I surely can arm myself with international experience. So I packed up and played for 3 years. And when that rolled around in 1995, you know, three Olympic gold medals later, if I chose to go the other route and not hurdle that, I would not be a three-time Olympian. I would not be a two-time assistant coach, gold medal Olympian. And I wouldn't be the head coach of an Olympic team today. So I chose to go the hardest route and not the easiest route. And I got to the other side and it's been plentiful.
Where were you when you got the information or the news that you didn't make the team?
We were there at the Olympic Training Center.
You were there. And so were you with others, or did you walk up by yourself to a board and see who was on the cut line?
No, they brought you in one by one.
One by one. Okay.
One by one. The committee members and they tell you whether you made it or not.
And how old were you?
I was 22 years old, 1992. I was college player of the year.
That's right. The best player in American basketball, you know, for college. And so when you were walking in, did you have a sense that you didn't make it? Or did you think like, oh yeah,
I'm a winner. I thought I played well enough to make it.
Right. Okay. And then, so they brought you in, and how did that, do you remember what you were wearing?
I don't, I was probably wearing some USA basketball gear.
Okay. And then when you came in, you sat down, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. One coach or two coaches were in there?
There were two people, not coaches, committee members.
Committee members. And however they delivered it, what was your experience when you heard the news and they said, I'm unfortunate, I'm sorry, or whatever they said?
I reacted like most young people, which was, it's bullshit and it's political.
You said that right away?
No, my bubble.
Your bubble said. See, no, you talk to yourself. Yeah, yeah. Look at you. Yeah. Okay, so you said bullshit and political. And then, interesting that you blamed the circumstances. You didn't, but then you changed your internal approach. So you didn't just get stuck blaming.
Yeah, it was something that I wanted. And I like to prove people wrong. I do. I like to prove them wrong. I like to be an odds beater, because it's the very thing that fuels me.
Do you have a chip still?
Huge. Yes. I coach with a chip. Yes.
You do. Yeah. Okay. So, look, how do you do that? Because you've won everything. What else is there to win?
I mean, there are haters and detractors out there.
I know. I was hoping you go there. I was being silly with that, because you've got lots of press on you, like amazingly favorable press. But then you've got like press that is, I would imagine, hard to read. But maybe you don't read it. Maybe you don't read some of that stuff.
I read it all.
Okay. So how do you deal with it? What is one of the ones? I don't want to give any power to any particular writer, but give me a theme that shows up that you go,
Well, it may not be a theme that's directed to, it's indirectly impacting me and our team. So go back to 2020, okay? Women's basketball, the decision makers of women's basketball decided that they were going to push Sabrina Ionescu the whole season, which, don't get me wrong, probably one of the greatest college players ever to play the game and deserving of the spotlight. Beginning of the year, she's coming in. They went to the Final Four the previous year. She's got triple doubles on triple doubles on triple doubles. There's room for her to be celebrated, right? Same year, we lose a game in November, and then we never lost a game since. And we ended up somehow they lost, and it was kind of swept under the rug, but we were winning, and we kept getting this momentum to compete for a national championship. Now, at this time, you have to understand that we're a predominantly Black team coached by a Black coach. And the narrative never shifted. They never pivoted. They continued on with this narrative. And I'm wondering why. And I didn't really say a whole lot during that time because I didn't want to be a distraction to our team. But I'm reading, I'm looking, I'm keeping notes, and then the bottom falls out, right?
Yeah.
So, when the bottom fell out, they continued with the narrative of Sabrina, which I know was her last year and all of that. Room for her to be reveled in that. But then you don't speak on who was the number one team for the past 9 weeks of the season. You never really give us the publicity because you're sticking with that narrative. Now, I don't know if it's a race thing or what, but I did have a few choice words to a decision maker. And was I wrong? No, I don't think I was wrong. But I told them how I felt and I told them how it looked, not just for South Carolina, but for the rest of women's basketball, because there were a lot of great stories that weren't covered and we missed the mark and the bottom fell out. So the only thing that people are going to hear about is the one narrative when maybe they said they were going to do these stories during the NCAA tournament, but we never had an NCAA tournament because the bottom fell out, pandemic hit, and now we're left with not these untold stories. I mean, they ended up doing an hour feature on us during that time, but I was still talking about the other stories that we missed. And I don't think it will change. I think they're going to go to the hottest thing. And honestly, if it's a white student athlete player that is good and deservedly so, if they're good, great. But let's not lose all the other powerful stories in our game, because that's what our game has been built on, is the stories, the great athletes, you know, the great teams. And let's not lose sight of that. So I just feel like that's a chip. That's a huge chip that I coach with.
Who are some of the, if you could sit with a master of craft, somebody that is alive or not with us anymore, and you could, you know, sit at their knee for a little bit, who would you want to learn from? Who would you want to have that conversation with?
Just any craft?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I would, you know, this is a weird one and not out of left field, but this is one person that I grew up watching from afar. It's Princess Diana. I always had something hearing about what she does, what she did for young people and underprivileged. I just really found her fascinating.
And if you had one question, I don't like being a reductionist, but there's something fun about it sometimes. But like, if you had one question.
If I had one question, I would ask her what she would do differently to impact a mass of people. Because one person can really change how a mass of people think and operate. And when you can impact lots and lots of people, I think that's the most powerful thing in a positive way now, because we got somebody that can impact a mass of people in a negative way and find ourselves where we are today.
Not to be political. Yeah. Okay. How do you finish this thought? It all comes down to
beating the odds.
My vision is
to help as many people as possible.
I believe that
there is a God.
Mastery is
having an understanding of the good, the bad, the ugly of a craft, and being able to explain it to anyone.
I am
my mother's child.
Love is
exceptional.
You feel all that, don't you?
I do.
Yep. Don, I've loved this conversation. Thank
Same
you.
Same here. Very different than the podcast I've been on. I've learned a whole lot, and I appreciate you just, sharing your expertise and helping me realize really the power of me. Because sometimes I just don't stop. I don't stop to figure things out. I just continue to go and try to help people as much as possible.
Well, I thank you. This has been fun and meaningful and a joy, and it's everything I hope for, in this conversation. And I don't know what this is worth, but so I spent about a decade inside the NFL working with a team, the Seahawks, as I mentioned earlier. You could run that team. You could run a team. Coach Carroll's doing a great job. I'm not saying it like that. And I think about like that alpha male environment, and like, how tall are you?
5'6".
Yeah, you're running that team. Like, so I'd love to do that with you. Like, can you imagine? You could, and I bet you don't know much about football, but that is so secondary, because you get a great offensive coordinator, you get a great defensive coordinator on the X's and O's, and you pick it up quickly. It's not, you understand the language of humans, and you understand the language of high performance. Like, what a thought experiment that is for me right now to imagine you doing that. Hey, listen, thank you. If there's anything I can do to ever help you along your path, I'm honored to have this brief time that we've shared. So I'm grateful for it. And honestly, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a Quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.